In the world of sports, a tale unfolds. Otani's interpreter, stories untold. Millions vanished, a gambler's spree. Dodgers drama, what a mystery. And NFL free agents find new homes, and it's quite bold, I'm told. Free agents dance in the fray, contracts signed, hopes rise and sway. There's a free agency frenzy where stars are signed to play. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, episode 78. Hello, everybody. It's good to be back. It's been a little while. I've been pumping these out two podcasts every 10 days, and I'm trying to get on a regular once-a-week schedule. I've got some good news, though. If you're a basketball fan, you will no longer see Eddie Aparicio here unless I bring him in to talk some specific NBA news. Why, you ask? He has his own podcast with his buddy Anthony Corrales. So Eddie Aparicio, Anthony Corrales. Check it out. It's called Buzzer Beaters. Look, you can find this podcast, Buzzer Beaters, our political and our entertainment podcast at grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us on YouTube and Rumble under the profile handle Grumblings Media, as well as traditional podcast outlets such as Apple, Spotify, Google, and Pandora. We've got a great show for you tonight. Or rather, I've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to talk free agency, NFL free agency, the quarterbacks, the first weekend. We're coming to the end of week two. Is it week two or week three? Well, it just started free agency about a week and a half ago. And, you know, during the first couple of days is when most of the big news breaks. And, of course, that is what happened. So we're going to talk on the quarterbacks this episode. Then we're going to move on to running backs, receivers, and then the rest of the position. But we are going to cover most of it. And I'm going to give you my unvarnished take. Look, I was one of the best fantasy football players in my era. And it was because I understood the bigger picture. I'm always arguing with my partner and others because understanding the big picture is key to any entrepreneurial success. In fact, if you don't understand the big picture, you're never going to be successful in whatever leadership or managerial type role you want. So you've got to be able to understand the big picture. What I mean by understanding the bigger picture is looking beyond the obvious. When it comes to football, stats is the obvious. Got to look a little deeper. Look at the situation each player was in. The team, the coach, the playing style, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk some Major League Baseball. Look, baseball just kicked off. Shohei Ohtani is in the news with gambling. And we're also going to go back to the NFL, talk about some NFL rules changes, specifically the hip rule and kickoffs, as well as a couple of other notes. So, let's get to it, my friends, and let us start with the NFL, the National Football League, and free agency. First of all, a hat tip here to The Athletic. Look, The Athletic is owned by the New York Times, one of the worst, one of the worst rags in the history of this country. Look, this rag goes back to lying about Ukraine and Russia and the grain embargo, how Russia kept the Ukrainians from growing grain, starved them out, literally killed millions of them. And the New York Times hid it, purposely hid it. The editors knew the reporter was hiding it. And you know what? The guy won a Pulitzer Prize for his coverage during that era. That, and it goes back even farther, the yellow journalism. That is a bad rag. But they bought The Athletic, and I'll be honest, a lot of those reporters at The Athletic would say, no, he's lying. That's because they don't recognize my name. I was cutting their checks when they worked for my previous company when I had a beat reporter in every NFL locker room. When a lot of these guys worked for me, they were young kids in their late 20s, early 30s, moving on up in the world. So, but it's old newspaper-style reporting, in-depth stats, analysis. Good stuff, good stuff. Much better than you'll find on Fox, ESPN, CBS, all those other places. That's how good they are. And I get nothing out of it. And 99% of those guys are swine. They're leftists. But they have good coverage. So a hat tip to The Athletic. It was not one article. It's just a whole series of articles. And a hat tip to ESPN's Phil Yates, who used to follow me until my conservatism came out. And boom, he unfollowed me like a lot of others have. Cowards, you know, white bread cowards. But he seems to be a very good guy, very good human being. He just wants to avoid all that crap, I guess. You know, the politics of it all. He's not a political guy like some of the haters over there. The reason he's a must-follow at Phil Yates, he had a great stat we're going to start with here. Three of the five quarterbacks picked in 2021 in the first round, where are they now? It's not one stat, but what he had to say about the 2021 first-round quarterbacks. The third pick, Trey Lance, was traded to the Dallas Cowboys for a fourth-round pick. The 11th pick, Justin Fields, was traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a conditional fourth-round pick or sixth-round pick for 2025. Probably depends on how well he does. The 15th pick, Mac Jones, was traded to the Jacksonville Jaguars for a sixth-round pick in 2026. Again, Phil Yates is a must-follow on X, and that was a very good tweet. What Phil didn't tell you is this is kind of common, not the trading away, but the bust. I mean, more players become busts than actually have success. And with the way the NFL works now, it's you got to produce now. You're not given 3 years as a young quarterback to find your groove. I mean, you are, but by the end of year three, they're looking at you being top 10 to show that elitism. And these players haven't. And, you know, Trey Lance, injury-prone, small college, should never have been taken that high. I don't know, you know, everybody marvels at the 49ers, but we're human. People can be idiots and make stupid decision mistakes. And that was one, giving the farm up for an unproven player who turned out to be injury-prone and couldn't stay on the field. And they couldn't afford a locker room controversy, so they shipped him out, plus the money. You know, obviously, Justin Fields has a talent. He started to play better in the second half. His problem is arrogance. You know, he looks down on the fact that they were trying to turn him into an actual freaking quarterback. And he fought that the first half. I think the second half, he started to see the writing on the wall, but it wasn't enough to save it. But the guy has a great arm. His problem is, you know, he goes to the read number one, stops reading, tucks the ball and runs. That's what a lot of athletic quarterbacks do in college. Now, most people are going to say, oh, that's a black quarterback. No, it's the athletic quarterback. It's a person who used their athletic talent through high school. It was still a man amongst boys in college, and the coaches would rather win than develop the player, so they let him be an athlete first, quarterback second. And that produces a lot of NFL failures. And Justin Fields has to learn how to play the quarterback position because he's got a phenomenal arm. He throws a wonderful deep ball. I don't think he's going to get developed in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has not developed quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger came in, and he was unique. He came in throwing, slinging his gun. In fact, if I remember correctly, he was a starter. Took the team to the playoffs as a rookie. Don't quote me, but Mike Tomlin's never had a developed quarterback. He gave up on Mason Rudolph. Rudolph was better than Pickett. Had they developed Rudolph, they wouldn't be in the situation they are now. So I don't have faith in Justin Fields going to the Steelers. Mac Jones had solid rookie year. We're going to get into Mac Jones a bit, not deeply, but he's among some of the moves I'm going to talk about. So let's get back to Justin Fields. So you have the old guard versus the new guard. Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky gone. Trubisky cut, Rudolph signed with another team, and Pickett was traded to the Eagles. Look, after Matt Canada was fired, I don't want to say midseason, but close to it this past year, Pickett went 24-33 for 278 yards against the Bengals. He got hurt the next week, and his career ended. The speculation was that when the team traded for Russell Wilson from the Denver Broncos, he would compete. I don't know why he got that or why the Steelers would lie and say you're going to be able to compete. You know, Russell Wilson did not sign the minimum tender to go there and to compete for a job. He signed a minimum tender to help the team so that his salary wouldn't hurt them with the salary cap. He gets a give and take. he was going to come in expecting to be the de facto starter, and Pickett played lights out in training camp. Any incumbents would tell you, well, you know, what can I say or do? But supposedly Pickett was told he would be able to compete for the starting job. If the Steelers told him that, they lied, because that was never going to be the case. Russell is a short-term solution. I don't think they really cared for Pickett after they drafted him and what they saw. And the grass is always greener on the other side. I don't think Fields is going to fit in as smoothly as people think. When you look at Tomlin's history of troublemakers and how he's had to deal with them, he hasn't. They've kind of run over him, whether it's Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Santonio Holmes. I mean, you name it. And the sad truth is, Mike Tomlin has lived off of Bill Cowher's players. That's who he won the Super Bowl. He's not done anything with his own players, with his own GM there. So this is going to be interesting how this plays out with Justin Fields, because this is a turning point in Mike Tomlin's career as a head coach as well. I think Russell Wilson is going to do a good job over there in Pittsburgh. The problem with Russell Wilson haters is they're idiots. And I mean that. You know, I read one article said Russell Wilson, oh, he's always been a run first quarterback. Are you an idiot? They pay you six figures to be an idiot? Russell Wilson, when he came into the league, was the only quarterback in my 50-plus years of living and 40 years of watching the 40-plus years of watching the NFL that came in and was the first young quarterback who used his legs to buy time. He didn't go through read one and then tuck the ball and run. He went through his reads. He would use his legs to buy time. That's why they were in Super Bowl contention. The problem with Russell Wilson is he became a prima donna. Why? Look, Pete Carroll is a bum of a coach. Look what he did in the USC program. I'm sorry, Mike Ditka won the Super Bowl. Well, I wasn't impressive to me. I feel the same about Pete Carroll, especially with that play calling in the Super Bowl that he did lose. He ran the USC program into the ground because he let the players do whatever they wanted. Ended up costing him his job in the program. He walked away, multi-zillionaire, and the program was in shambles. He's not a good human being either. He didn't care about his players. That's why you saw some of his players getting into altercations over and over. He didn't care. All he cared about was what they did on the field. There was nobody there to mentor Russell Wilson. There was nobody there to tell Russell, hey, no, you can't do this. You got to do this or do it this way. Or no, that's not good. So that's a PR stuff. The point is Russell Wilson was a good guy, but became full of himself. So he went to Denver, got his fat contract, played like crap with one of the worst coach I have ever seen since I started watching football in the 70s. Nathaniel Hackett is the worst coach. That's not true. There was a coach in Minnesota, the coach that replaced Bud Grant, Les Steckel. He didn't even last training camp, I don't think. But anyway, Russell Wilson was humbled. He came back and started to play much better this past season. He's still under a rock, and he has to prove himself. That's why I think he's being very underrated by people who just want to hate him. You know? So Wilson's going to come in for the veteran minimum, $1.2 million. Why? Because the rest of that $30-some-odd million is going to be paid by the Broncos. They're footing the $85 million contract, sans $1.2 million. Fields only cost the Steelers the sixth-round pick. Fields must become consistent and, again, learn to be an NFL quarterback. Talent only goes so far, people, and his instinct will not get him over the top. That's why he's not in Chicago anymore. You know, people talk about the Bears haven't developed a quarterback. The Bears didn't develop. The Steelers haven't either. You know, the truth of the matter is their last great quarterback, Terry Bradshaw, I mean, that guy went through ups and downs, and he wasn't even the star. He was a game manager. Then Neil O'Donnell, you know, another game manager towards the end of Chuck Noll, Bill Cowher's early reign, I believe. And, hell, Bill Parcells didn't even like it. Bill Parcells is a bit overrated, too. When I say overrated, people talk about these coaches, the greatest things since sliced bread. If it wasn't for Wide Left or Norwood or whatever, and we wouldn't be talking about Parcells as much as we do. Belichick, yeah, that's different. Tom Brady, that's different. Bill Walsh, that's different. Chuck Noll, that's different. We're not having one or two taking appearances and wins like Parcells. We're talking about coaches that took different teams. And maybe I'm underselling Parcells a little bit. Parcells actually did take two different quarterbacks to the Super Bowl. So let me retract that. But my point is, statistics will only take you so far with somebody like Justin Fields. And players get love, they get hate. A lot of it's undeserved, some of it's well deserved. But Fields' rep right now is based off of highlight plays, that deep throw. The problem is there's a lot of plays between that where he just stinks. And talent will only get you so far. His statistics tend to get ignored over a few highlight reels. And fans always fall prey to this. Other NFL teams did not. That's why there wasn't a high market for him, which is why he only rated a sixth-round pick. So I apologize. I got off on a tangent with Parcells and head coaches. Let's get back to the players. So was Matt Canada or Kenny Pickett the problem? We don't know. Matt Canada got fired. Kenny Pickett had a decent statistical day. Got hurt the next week. His Steelers career was pretty much over. They have a new offensive coordinator in Arthur Smith. Look for Arthur Smith to really focus in on that rushing attack. Why he did it in Atlanta, I don't know. But that's what he did in Tennessee with King Henry, Derrick Henry. So I expect much of the same here. Look for the team that's going to be driven by an RB duel of Najee Harris and Jalen Warren. The Steelers haven't won a playoff game in 7 seasons. This is a make-or-break year for Mike Tomlin. If Mike Tomlin does not make the playoffs, he's fired. I'm probably the only analyst who's going to tell you that. But at the end of the day, that's exactly what it's been. I apologize. I've got something in the back here. I've got a sore back this morning, and it keeps pushing me forward in my chair. So I apologize. Okay, so. Again, this team will be driven by the rushing attack. The Steelers haven't won a playoff game in 7 seasons. And it's they played this type of football, smash-mouth football, strong defense, keep the game close, and hope you're in it to pull out the win. That's kind of old-school football, and it still works today. I mean, let's be honest. The way those defenses ramped up with the Chiefs at the end there, they won with their natural style of play, but that defense played a big factor in keeping it close. And once the playoff season started to roll around, and so Steelers have a good formula. I don't know if they had the depth to be able to pull it off. To use the formula of a strong defense, power rushing attack, and big plays with a deep throw, you have to have depth on the offensive defensive linemen, especially in the secondary, because that's where the work's going to be put to keep the Chiefs from scoring, or to keep them off the field. You're asking a lot. Again, Steelers haven't won a playoff game in 7 seasons, and Tomlin has struggled with his own problem child. You know, again, as an analyst, I study the games, I study the situations, I talk to people. I don't talk to people really too much anymore, I used to. But look, nobody talks about this, but Tomlin is a player's coach, but he has his issues and bad issues. Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Juju Schuster, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson. Plaxico Burress. Was Plaxico Burress a Steeler? I can't remember that long ago, but I could be wrong on that one. I don't know. I'm curious now. Plaxico Burress. Yeah. Was Plaxico Burress? You know, we have AI now. Let us ask AI. Was Plaxico... Let's see. Did Plaxico Burress play for the Steelers? I want to say he did. Let us see. Yes! He did, but I thought he so. And that was another problem child he had. So it's not like Tomlin is this type of coach that players will go to war for. You know, some will, obviously some won't. And he's had issues with the locker room. So I am looking at this situation. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Russell Wilson first. As far as the Steelers, that's the battle. Russell Wilson's your starter. Kenny Pickett is now with the Eagles as a backup. Justin Fields is going to be seen as the future. How quick he gets into the game will depend on how well Russell Wilson performs. So I talked a little bit about Russell Wilson, his early days in Seattle. Remember, he was only the only drafted NFL quarterback who didn't have to learn to use his legs to buy time.
versus using them to run as most do. He came into the league knowing his legs were his strength to buy time for that deep ball. And part of it had to do with the same formula that the Steelers used: strong defense, savage rushing attack, a quarterback who could buy time to make the deep pass. Same formula. So Russell Wilson is going home in a different city. His final years in Seattle, he became, again, a prima donna who thought he couldn't do anything wrong, and he began to get lazy. The fire was gone. Head coach Pete Carroll, again, is notorious for letting players do what they want. They'd be gone in 3 to 4 years at USC, so he didn't care. Do what you want. I don't care, as long as you perform on the field. And with Wilson, he never mentored nor handled him properly. Carroll didn't do his job. That's why they lost the Super Bowl. Carroll just did not have a good grip as well as he should have had on that team. That's what separates greatness from being great. Is Pete Carroll a great coach? Yes. Does he epitomize greatness like Bill Walsh? No, not at all. Once the program was busted at USC, he fled a rich man. 2024 season. Under the gun, Russell Wilson showed his value to the Broncos despite inept coaching and play around him. You know, Sean Payton is trying to look like the golden boy here. He has not won anything since 2009. Translation, people, 15 freaking years ago. He's been living off his rep. Let's call it a gum spade. What is it? Is that politically correct to say? Calling a spade a spade? I don't know anymore in this politically correct, stupid world. But Payton also had a rep of not being a good guy before he got the coaching job with the Saints. That was his rep. I can't remember if he came out of Oakland or the Giants. I know both of them were looking at him at one point, and the Saints were the ones that landed him. But he did not have a rep as a players coach, as a player, as being beloved by the players. He had a rep for his X's and O's. Didn't have a rep as a leader. Didn't have a rep of being a man amongst men. He just had a rep for doing his X's and O's. And you got that with the Saints. You also got the Saints upset in a lot of playoff games. And you also, again, had a lot of great statistical leaders and categories with one Super Bowl. His Saints teams were upset more in playoffs than they won when the odds favored them. And that's my take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Russell Wilson will surprise. Justin Fields, we don't know what will become of him. Kenny Pickett is doomed to become a career backup. Oh, my goodness. My goodness. All right. So, let's go on to the Colts. They signed Joe Flacco. Look, backup and starter Gardner Minshew went to the Raiders. So the team signed Flacco. I think they got a better backup in Flacco than they had with Minshew. Minshew could show you a highlight reel and then lose you a game. And Flacco can do that, but Flacco will win you games more than he'll lose you games. He has a one-year deal worth $8.7 million, $4.5 million is guaranteed. Head coach Shane Steichen knows him from the 2021 Eagles season. Following the 2023 season, the NFL named Flacco Comeback Player of the Year, and he was signed in Week 12 by the Browns, and again, took him to the playoffs. Yeah, they got better play at pennies on the dollar with Joe Flacco than they're getting out of Deshaun Watson. Now, there's a good chance Flacco's going to play. How much, we don't know. But, look, starter Anthony Richardson is a beast of a specimen in terms of what kind of quarterback he can be. But he's injury prone. It doesn't matter if you're a big dude can run over people. If you're injury prone, as he was this past season, we don't know how long he'll last in the NFL. You can be a man amongst boys in college, but you can't be a boy amongst men or a man amongst men in the NFL and hope to survive those hits over and over and over. Good signing by the Colts. Fantasy. Look, if you're in a fantasy, I would take Russell Wilson as a second to last round flyer, depending on how many quarterbacks your rules, etc. Don't touch Joe Flacco. I wouldn't touch Anthony Richardson except as a backup anyway. On my fantasy team. All right, the Commanders traded Sam Howell. You know, Seattle received a 4th and 6th round picks, numbers 102 and 179. The Commanders received a 3rd and 5th round selection, numbers 78 and 152. The Redskins are looking for a completely brand new fresh start with a quarterback this regime selects. You know, I argue with Big John on this. Like, I'm a fantasy stud when it came to understanding players, the data, etc. And I always stick to my guns. And I'm telling you, I'm an arrogant mother peeper on that. And this is what I'm saying about Sam Howell. The kid is counting. The kid has game. The kid can't play in the NFL as a starter. He was the most sacked quarterback last year in the NFL. When a quarterback sees 60-plus sacks, you have to worry about happy feet. You have to worry about their psyche. Fantasy players don't see that. You know, they don't understand the concept of your quarterback's only as good as that offensive line. He can become a starter. So, what does this mean for the Seattle Seahawks? He's going to start as a backup to Geno Smith. Geno Smith is what you call it's what Russell Wilson is supposed to be. He's a bridge quarterback who can start, compete, get their team playoffs, but I don't think he can take them to the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl. That's why the Seahawks look to their defense and their rushing attack more importantly than they do the quarterback, because that's the key for them making it deep in the playoffs. The problem with the Seahawks is they're not what they were years ago at those positions, or in terms of defense overall, the secondary and the rushing attack. So Geno Smith will be the starter. Sam Howell will have a chance to start. He will also likely be able to come in a game or two if Geno Smith goes down, which most starters do. Smith has a ceiling. We don't know if Sam Howell does. However, the offense suits both quarterbacks. They're not known for mobility, and they're drop back passers. His play with the Redskins, again, was a product of a pathetic team overall. Look, Ron Rivera is just not a very good head coach. I've said this to the matter. This is my take on head coaches who go to the Super Bowl with one team. Was it the players or your coaching? We'll never know. So by default, I say it's the players, not the head coach. And that's how I feel about Ron Rivera. After that team was broken up because of salary cap, age, etc., the Panthers, he sucked, got fired. With the Washington, sucked, got fired. That's who I think is a real Ron Rivera. Howell was sacked 65 times this past season under Rivera as head coach. Second behind the New York Giants. 85? Oh, my God. The team must hope Howell can overcome happy feet syndrome with that many sacks. He's mobile, though, and he has streaks of toughness with a big arm. I think that's a great signing for the Seahawks. I think Howell is somebody you're going to keep your eye on to see what happens to him. All right. No. I don't think he's going to take the place Geno Smith. I don't think he's going to usurp that job and win it. I think Geno Smith, they're going to go with a safe bet, give it to him. He knows the offense. They're going to let Howell come in and work his way into potentially batting for the starting position. Here's one for fantasy owners. Kirk Cousins to Atlanta. Cousins' new contract calls for $180 million over 4 years with $100 million guaranteed. Then there's a $50 million signing bonus. In 2024 and 2025, he gets $45 million per year. And in 2025, he gets another $10 million. Just like, my God, the rich kid is rich. And this guy has, you can count on three fingers how many games of importance he's won. Shit, he's probably earned about $300 million in dollars as a quarterback. He is a top-tier quarterback. He ranks up there in passing categories, such as yards per game, passing touchdowns, passer rating, and passing yards. He was 51-39-1 during his six-year tenure, assuming that's with the Vikings. Remember, here's what people forget. Here's what most analysts refuse to tell you because they don't know. They're that bad of an analyst. His head coach was Mike Zimmer, who was a defensive-minded, and he didn't care for the offense. He didn't even care for Cousins that much. He held that offense back. He held that offense from achieving its best, which could have gotten them to the Super Bowl. All Zimmer cared was about getting women that were 30 years younger than he was. God bless him. He just dealt with the ladies. He was a dud as a head coach. I think the Zimmer regime was truly a pathetic regime that missed its Super Bowl window because of ego and selfishness. I forget the guy, the GM, Spielman. Rick Spielman, great guy. Love him to death. But he should have let Zimmer go a while ago. And the problem was Zimmer did well enough to keep the job, but he was never a good enough head coach to get the team over the hump. You can blame the players. I blame the coaching regime. The downside with Cousins is he's 35, recovering from an Achilles tear. He probably only has a few good seasons left. He's a drop-back quarterback. He's not a rusher, so he could literally play into his 40. You know, he doesn't have to wear a tear. The Falcons can now legitimately compete. The Falcons were a quarterback away from competing for the weak NFC South last year. The truth of the matter is Arthur Smith should not have been fired. I mean, he was literally, he built the team up. One player away. So, you know, I've lost all respect for Arthur Blank. He's just a bum, another owner bum who was meddling and shouldn't have meddled. Should have given his coach that final year to get the quarterback he needed. Now, maybe Arthur Smith said he didn't need and Desmond Ridder was good enough, but I don't think that was the case. And so they hired an NFL loser in defensive minor Raheem Morris. But he does come from the Rams, so he comes from a high-potent offense there with Matthew Stafford and company. So maybe some of that rubbed off on him. How, we don't know, but we know this. On paper, not on the field, he has studs in Bijan Robinson, running back, wide receiver Drake London, and tight end Kyle Pitts. Again, on paper. Their offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, coached under the Rams head coach, Sean McVay. And for the record, that's where the Vikings head coach, Kevin O'Connell, came from, too. The offensive line is outstanding. So, Raheem Morris should be going from loser status to winner status. There's no excuse for the Falcons. There's no excuse for Raheem Morris. There's no excuse for Kirk Cousins. There's no excuse for Arthur Blank as an owner. This team was a quarterback away. They got their quarterback. So, let's see what they do. Now, here's the one. You're not going to like me saying this because you're going to go, William, you're an idiot. Yeah, they should tell me that about my receivers, my wide receiver core. Because I'd always look for the sleepers. I'd always look for the second-tier receivers. And I'd pile on like six of them. And I'd play the matchups. And I'd get the stud running backs, the stud quarterbacks, the tight end. And always the top-tier DT. The weakness was always receivers. But it was the most plentiful position in the NFL. Thus, I played the waiver wire, and I won championship after championship. I think I, like, won 30-some-odd championships in 10 years against my peers, against the John Hansons of the world, the Scott Angles of the world, the studs of the world. I owned all of them. In fact, I think I won the Fantasy Guru Hanson's first – we won the first couple of years, I think, won the big TV. He didn't like that. He changed the rules. Yeah, Hanson doesn't like me anymore. Good guy, great guy, but we had a folly now. Politics. Oye, este latino no va a decir nada, pero la verdad. Y blanquito no gustan la verdad. Blanquito que son democráticos no gustan la verdad. I go, look, I'm a Latino. I must be truth. White Democrats, white leftists don't like it when I speak the truth. It really is that simple. And that's what happened there. So, let's get the wide receiver Sam Darnold. My first question is, when have the New York Jets ever developed a quarterback in my lifetime? They haven't. They've had a couple of good quarterbacks from the 80s, but they haven't developed anything since then. Best example is Joe Flacco. He went 1-9 there with the Jets. They dumped him. You're a has-been. You're over the hill. You're in your late 30s. You suck. You caused us Jets to be a worse team. Following year, Brown signed him in week 12. He leads the Browns to the playoffs. So you tell me who can and can't develop quarterbacks. Not that the Browns did, but Joe Flacco, once he left the disgust that is called the New York Jets and Woody Johnson, the owner, and Robert Saleh. What a bum of a head coach. I mean, that guy. All that talent on defense, and it wasn't even – I mean, it was a top-tier defense, but it wasn't an elite defense by far. Anyway – my point being is Sam Darnold went to purgatory in the NFL with the Jets. He then went to the Carolina Panthers, who were just as inept. I mean, see Bryce Young. you know, the Panthers never even developed Cam Newton. Once Cam Newton's physical skills, meaning when he got hit, it hurt, versus him being able to run through hits and run through men, he was a man amongst men in the NFL. That guy was a stud. But once his physical talent started to deteriorate because of age and wear and tear, he didn't have quarterback skills to fall back on. He's a terrible quarterback, a wonderful athlete. You know, so the Panthers, like the Jets, can't develop quarterbacks, and they fired Frank Reich, who's known as a quarterback guru. Honestly, I think Bryce Young is just too small, undersized. Alabama covered for his deficiencies. And you can be a great quarterback as a boy in college. Once you get in the NFL, it's all men, though. He ended up with the 49ers, stable coaching regime, understood the position. When you saw him play, you saw some of those moves. You saw some of that. Oh, Sam Darnold. You saw some of the mechanics being corrected. He only got a little bit of game action, but you did see a different Sam Darnold. That's the Sam Darnold that the Vikings now have. That's the Sam Darnold in an offense that understands how to play, how to perform, efficiency, understands everything that's needed to go with a high-powered offense. My proof? Kirk Cousins with the Vikings. They've got Kevin O'Connell there. He has a one-year deal worth $10 million. And they're looking at him as a bridge quarterback. I don't think they're going to take a quarterback this cycle. I think if they did their homework, they're going to look at Sam Darnold and go, look, we got our guy here. Maybe they trade down. Or maybe they did take a quarterback. I don't know. Who knows? But the reason I say that is he's only 26. Darnold's not looking at this as a bridge. Darnold was incredibly intelligent, and him or his agent in selecting the Vikings. This will be the best coach team he's been on as a starter in terms of offensive capabilities. Hell, after that, after what we've seen from Kyle Shanahan in postseason play, man, talk about overrated. I'm being picky here. Kyle Shanahan has done a great job. You know, I got to fix my camera here. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, let me fix this camera. Kyle Shanahan's done a great job. It just, you know, there comes a point where he's becoming Marty Schottenheimer. Great regular season coach, terrible playoff coach. But the point is, Darnold could be the Vikings' answer. He can showcase himself with the talent around him versus his other stops as a starter with no talent, no coaching capability in Carolina or the Jets. All right, Matt Jones, straight to the Jaguars. Look, Jones' career is done. He's going to be a backup now, unless Trevor Lawrence falls completely on his face. But I have faith in Lawrence. I think we have yet to see the best out of Lawrence. Look, Jones had a solid rookie season that saw him elected to the Pro Bowl when he was with New England. Then in year two, he had a defensive coordinator as his play caller. I mean, there was some input from special teams ace, Joe Judge, former head coach for the Giants. And my point is, I'm old school. I believe if you want to be head coach, you need to become a coordinator of what branch you're from. If you're not from the offensive side, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. But I also believe you need to have a few years underneath. If you're a defensive specialist, at least 2 to 3 years underneath an offensive coordinator to learn the mindset. That's how it used to be. It's no longer that way. You know, maybe that's one reason why I don't have a lot of faith in these whiz kid coaches, you know. The coach from the Bengals, if it's not for Joe Burrows, we don't hear anything about him. Sean McVay, if it's not for Matthew Stafford, we don't know who he is. You know, these are head coaches that have highlight reel offenses, but they can't bring – those offenses are never actually ever developed or seen in its full blossom until they actually find – the stud quarterback. You know, Marty Schottenheimer could take what he had and build a team. You know, Kyle Shanahan could take what he has and build a team. And that's what I'm talking about. The Patriots didn't have even that. They didn't even have whiz kids at any of the coordinating positions. They just had old school, out of style offense. Scheming, I guess, you know. My point is, he was not in a good situation in year two. And in year three, we all thought it would turn around with, you know, Bill O'Brien. But it was what it was. It was a team with no identity. It was a team in shambles who thought they could no longer win without Tom Brady. And it was a head coach who fed that perception that Tom Brady made him. Bill Belichick actually was a very good head coach in various decision-making processes over the years with Tom Brady. So they needed each other. I thought Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Super Bowl was a complete fluke. But at the end of the day, he's a gamer. He's not the GOAT. He never caught his plays. He was always part of that whole team. Did they win without him? I don't know. It was a different team. He left. He left because he saw the writing of the law. He's a team in decline. He wanted to go out. He'd had enough of the Patriots wanting to do it on his own. And he did it. But him, Manning, any modern day quarterback, they're not the GOAT. You know why, people? Y'all don't know this. But when I was a kid, quarterbacks caught their own plays. You know, the reputation was Terry Bradshaw couldn't spell a cat if you spotted it, the C and the T, and that's true. But he could call his own plays and could read a defense. Today's quarterbacks don't do that. So they'll never be considered the GOAT. And today's rules completely destroy defenses compared to the 70s. So you can't tell me that these quarterbacks today are better than the quarterbacks of yesteryear. Put that quarterback, put Joe Montana in today's offense. He's got 7 Super Bowl rings, period, if not more. Okay, I'm speculating when I say that, but you get my point. So, the perception took over, and whether true or not, the current Belichick regime had to go. And Matt Jones had become the face of failure with the new Belichick regime. Both parties knew that the end was near, but the question remained whether Matt Jones would continue regressing or if he could return to form. Well, the Patriots didn't care about taking that shot with him. And they moved on. It's tough to bounce back as a backup, but maybe he needs a year off just to regather himself and to believe that he can play as a starting quarterback in the league. And look, Trevor Lawrence is a durable quarterback, but he got beat up last year. And if that team does not get a rushing attack to help Trevor Lawrence out, as well as maybe a tight end, he's going to get hurt again, and we will see Mac Jones. Their head coach, Doug Peterson, has a knack for developing quarterbacks who can step in and start. Nick Foles, and to an extent, last season, C.J. Beathard. So, Matt Jones, no fantasy value. Oh, real quick on Darnold, I think he has fantasy value. Him and Russell Wilson, I'm taking them with my final pick in the draft, depending on the quarterback rules, and I'm keeping an eye on them in the waiver wire. You know, that's how highly I think of them in terms of being underrated. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they re-signed Baker Mayfield. Look, Baker Mayfield agreed to a 3-year, $100 million contract with the Bucs. It includes $50 million guaranteed with a max value of $115 million. Look, this gives the Bucs continuity and familiarity. The Bucs maintain continuity at the quarterback position by re-signing him. And he knows the players. He's got chemistry with Mike Evans, Hall of Fame wide receiver, coaching staff. And his other offensive weapons. Look, the Bucs have to find a rushing attack. You know, they're an average team in an extremely weak division. I'm not a big fan of Baker Mayfield. I'm a big fan of him coming back. I'm a big fan of how the Browns threw him under the bus and how he managed to sit there and take the Bucs to the playoffs while Deshaun Watson's just collecting fat checks while going to massage parlors in Cleveland, probably. Yeah, BB. I don't care. So, it's good, Donnie. As far as fantasy, I wouldn't touch Baker Mayfield. He gets me nervous every time he drops back to throw. But he's a gamer and competitor, and he's a leader. He rejuvenated his NFL career. He posted career highs in completions, passing yards, touchdowns, and completion percentage. His season performance, he led the Bucs to the NFC South title and a wild card win. He threw for over 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions with a 94.6 passer rating. His leadership qualities, they're there. He had the support. His teammates voted him team captain. He's resilient. He's competitive. And he does elevate those around him. And that's an asset in the locker room. Combined with his strong play, his leadership helped keep the team focused on winning the division and making the playoffs. Look, I always thought Mayfield, it could just all cave in. And he kept it together. They won their third straight division title, albeit in the league's worst division or one of the two worst divisions. And that's the NFC South, where the Bucs are at, and the AFC South, which ironically, where the Jaguars are at. I think Mayfield may have found his calling with the Bucs. I just don't see him having a long NFL career. But God bless him. And I'm happy for him coming back after the way the Browns mistreated him. It was terrible. And the Browns deserve to be where they're at with Deshaun Watson for their stupidity. And that's what you got here with quarterbacks. I'm sure there's other quarterback movements I'm going to come across as I continue my research. Next points on the board, we will be talking running backs. But right now, let's move on to Shohei Ohtani. First of all, a hat tip to ESPN and Tisha Thompson. Every article, every storyline, every podcast, every radio clip that you hear, its origins is from the Tisha Thompson clip. And that deals with Shohei Ohtani's interpreter and gambling. How do I pronounce his name? Ibe Mizuhara was his interpreter. And all this revolves around $4.5 million in gambling dues owed that obviously Mizuhara, or not obviously, but supposedly Mizuhara owns. So, real quick, Ohtani signed a $700 million 10-year contract with the Dodgers in December after playing six seasons with the Angels. And Mizuhara was his translator with the Angels, and that continued after the Dodgers took him. Mizuhara came along with him. Now, attorneys for Ohtani told reporters, and this is a quote, "In the course of responding to recent media inquiries, we discovered that Shohei has been the victim of a massive theft, and we are turning the matter over to the authorities." This happened because of federal tax laws. You know, well, I always get ahead of myself like they would with football. I apologize. Let me follow my notes here. So Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, had stolen money from the Dodgers star to place bets. And the money involved is allegedly $4.5 million per ESPN. A spokesman for Ohtani initially claimed that Ohtani had transferred the money to cover Mizuhara's gambling debts. That's what I actually believe did happen. Later, once lawyers became involved, Ohtani stated he was a victim of theft. The story evolved with Ohtani's lawyers later stating, obviously raising questions about the relationship between Ohtani and Mizuhara. The Los Angeles Dodgers obviously terminated Ipe Mizuhara's contract. I mean, what can you say? What can you mean? What a moron, man. You know, I used to work in the Alzheimer's industry. Before I became an entrepreneur and a forefather of the fantasy sports industry, I was in the military. I was in a nonprofit, you know, era. So I'm a well-rounded individual. And I can tell you, this whole scenario, I've heard it before in every other industry because Alzheimer's does not discriminate and it hits everybody. And especially when you have a lot of money and you have people who help handle your money. So, I'm getting ahead of myself. Mizuhara had been Ohtani's interpreter since he was signed with the Angels in 2017. I saw another report 2017-2018 is what we're looking at there. Mizuhara has a close relationship with Ohtani, including he quit his job during the 2022 lockout, and he continued to work with Ohtani. I apologize, people. It looks like I'm a little blurry here. Let me see if I can fix this. Interesting. Apologies, my friends. So it's not being questioned, but Mizuhara is not the nice guy we all thought he would be. He was born in Japan, but raised in Southern California. He attended Diamond Bar High School and USC Riverside, per his resume. Resume and potential lies. Look, a story in The Athletic. Again, you know, I did the hat tip to ESPN, and The Athletic took a lot of their cues from the ESPN storyline. But again, Athletic, God bless them. I love those guys over there, no matter the fact that they're hardcore dumbass leftists. Story in The Athletic outlined a series of inaccuracies in Mizuhara's resume in recent years. He said he was born in Japan, again, attended high school in L.A., graduated from the University of California, Riverside, which is up the road from me. As first reported by NBC Los Angeles, the university indicated their records did not contain evidence that Mizuhara ever attended the school. That's a massive red flag. I mean, that's what you get fired for. You know, that, and just didn't, it was just wasn't the college. We're talking now with the Yankees in Boston. Mizuhara also suggested he acted as a translator for pitcher Hideki Okajima during the spring of 2012 with the New York Yankees. If I remember correct, that was a magnet ad. Oh, magnet. You put magnets everywhere. There's no wives' tale that magnets help out. I don't know if that's true. I've heard people, I actually have met people who have used them. In fact, I remember a couple of Spectacles guys who believe that. Regardless, I'm digressing. But here's the problem. Okajima failed a physical and never attended camp with the club that year. And the Boston Red Sox also disputed previously published reports that Mizuhara had interpreted for Okajima during the pitcher's tenure there. So, we got a new translator. Performance Operations Manager Will Ireton, or Ireton, Ireton, that's how I like to say it. He joined the Dodgers in 2016 as an interpreter for pitcher Kenta Maeda, and now he's taking over the role for Otani. So, the investigation. The Los Angeles Times, another leftist rag. Hey, you know what? Even a clock gets it right twice a year. You know? So, okay. The newspaper learned Otani's name surfaced in an investigation of an Orange County bookie named Matthew Boyer. Mizuhara, who is 39, placed bets with Boyer, according to the newspaper. Federal investigators are examining the operation run by Matthew Boyer. The wire transfer payments were sent from Otani's account to an associate of Boyer's, according to multiple sources and bank data reviewed by ESPN. This is some serious stuff. It's not just the law in terms of going to jail. There's also tax code laws, which will send you to jail, too. But the worst arm of the law of government is the IRS. They take. They will even take and sell before you're found guilty. I got in a heated discussion with my Red, White, and Rude former co-host, Sean King, about that. And I still need to wrap that up over there in terms of showing cases where that's happened, because he said it never happened. But the point being, this is why the story changed. When Otani's lawyers got involved, is we're talking federal tax codes here. So Mizuhara is accused of using Otani's funds to place bets with Boyer, and Otani's representatives, as already stated, have turned the matter over to authorities. Now, there was an ESPN interview. Mizuhara spoke for about 90 minutes with ESPN. They stated that Otani paid off the gambling debts again, about $4.5 million. During the interview, and this was arranged by Otani's spokesman, Mizuhara told ESPN that he asked Otani, who's 29, to pay off his gambling debt. And Mizuhara said that he previously had placed bets via DraftKings and assumed bets placed through Boyer were legal. Now, that's a lie. I'm sorry. You do not confuse a bookie with an online operation. So that's a flat-out lie. You know, some people just play stupid to play stupid. I mean, what else can you really say? Yeah.
Oh, I thought they were one and the same, man.
Oh, my goodness. I hope my sound is not bad. Let me get my mic over here. Okay. So, Mizuhara told ESPN on Tuesday his bets were placed on international soccer, the NBA, the NFL, and college football. Like, I buy that. The one thing I think a player does have enough smarts or interpreter or whoever is don't bet on your sport. That's why I got mad when Calvin Ridley was punished. You know, he wasn't betting on his sport. These professional leagues are partnered with these gambling operations, but yet they tell the players you can't. You know, I loathe that. Yeah, so multiple sources, including Mizuhara, told ESPN that Otani does not gamble and that the funds were there to cover Mizuhara's losses. The story is that the bets through Boyer were done beginning in 2021, and to pay the bookie back, Otani did not give the money to Mizuhara directly because he didn't trust him enough where he thought he would just continually keep gambling, and I believe that too. It's like an alcoholic. Gamblers are no different than alcoholics. Obviously, the backtracking came the next day after the interview, stating that Otani's lawyer said he didn't know anything about the gambling, the debts, or the effort to repay them. If I'm Ijuhara now, and I'm being thrown under the bus, look, he's the bad guy in all this. But self-preservation is a human trait. We are not good. We are not bad when we are born. The one trait we all have in us is survival. You know, they always talk about, I forget the term, as a term, oh my God, I'm just drawing a blank, given mostly the mothers who will do anything to protect their kid. 90% of the examples they give are lies. The only time a mother will sacrifice herself is if she gives her life. A mother who's hiding her child out, who's committed a crime, altruistic. That's not being altruistic. That's being selfish, because there's another mother and family crying because of the man or woman who killed them, who killed a member of the family. So altruism is thrown out way too much. The only trait we are born with is the trait to survive. And Mizuhara is now in survival mode. So this story is their story that Otani's lawyers are saying is a lie. I mean, everything was this. And now because of federal tax laws and other laws, they're changing their story to protect Otani. So if I'm Mizuhara and I can't work a deal out, I'm throwing Otani under the bus to save my tail. They go, no, that was all him. I didn't gamble a single time. And then because he says, she said, and that's when witnesses have to come into the game. But this, my point being is this can get ugly rather quick. I don't expect it to, but it could. So MLB on gambling. MLB players and employees can bet on sports other than baseball, but not with illegal bookies or offshore websites. Again, that's something else I loathe. We haven't put them on sale yet, but the Grumblings Media Cup will be available soon. The league rulebook states that bets placed with illegal bookmakers are subject to punishment at the commissioner's discretion. So, at the end of the day, it's a he says, she said. The commissioner and the league have the potential to come under their own legal issues if Mizuhara decides to blow this up. So, it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. Because we're talking elitism. The league wants to protect Otani. They don't care about Mizuhara, and I'm not citing Mizuhara. I'm just looking at the soap opera that's gonna that could potentially come out. So Boyer's not directly connected, is what I thought I read once. So there's confusion that arises. Belay, that's a Navy term meaning. Hold on. Before I forget, so. Let me finish up on the gambling. So the league rulebook states that bets placed with illegal bookmakers are subject to punishment at the commissioner's discretion. So how was all this discovered? An individual named Wayne Nix and his illegal gambling operation. You're like, who's Wayne Nix, William? I haven't heard from him. Well, again, that's why you're listening to this show. Wayne Nix ran an illegal gambling business. He was part of a wider federal investigation. They raided Nix's home, and that's where Otani's name came up in connection with Nix's operations. It's unclear how it directly related to the wider investigation. Odds are they're tracking somebody's money. They track it from this bookie to that bookie or the bookie's name. Something where their paths cross happened. And because of that, they discovered Otani's name through Wayne Nix's illegal gambling operation. Boyer was not directly connected to Wayne Nix's operation. That's why you probably haven't heard of Wayne Nix or why there's some confusion because of that. Boyer's just another individual involved, and he's not charged with the crime, and he had no contact with Otani. There's a whole sub-story to that I'm not going to get into, but that's interesting too. Now, there was also another player, Yasiel Puig. Yasiel Puig. That investigation with Nix also ensnared former Dodger slugger Yasiel Puig, who is facing one federal count, making false statements and obstruction of justice. He initially pled guilty, but later changed his mind. Like, this guy's a little bit of a head job, a nutcase. He's also not a good person. In November 2022, Puig was charged with lying to federal law enforcement about placing bets with Nix's operation. His case is currently before the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, according to a spokesperson. Now, this story's fluid. You know, so maybe he's already gone to court, but that was the most recent that I could find. He acknowledged, Puig acknowledged accumulating over $280,000 in losses from gambling on tennis, football, and basketball games. Puig acknowledged accumulating $280,000 in losses from gambling on tennis, football, and basketball through a third party connected to the illegal gambling operation run by Nix. The reason I said he's not all there is he's got a third grade education. He has untreated mental health issues. All his millions are gone. He wasn't a good guy. He was never told no. A little side note, I've spoken to agents and retired players, and to a T, they've all told me, William, once a young man, a child, what's his special talent, his special skill? It doesn't matter if tennis, football, baseball, golf, whatever, is discovered. Oh, that kid is living on cloud nine. They're never told no. They're given special exemptions. They're protected in school because they're superstars in whatever field it is. So this guy was never told no. Third grade education, eventually having some mental health issues. Of course, he's going to turn into a bad guy in many ways. And he also did not have his own interpreter or legal counsel during the interview. And it was conducted via Zoom. You know, and that's what I don't like about the government. You know, it's one thing when you're facing an elitist. And they rarely face elitists because they have the money and they don't deal with those people. They deal with the senators, the congressmen, the department heads, meaning the Christopher Reyes of the world, the presidents of the world. So they're protected in many ways. It's always the poor, uneducated that get screwed over by our government. I'm a conservative, but I've seen it firsthand. It's happened to me. I'm a working class Joe. I've had to go fight for my life, and I've won, which is why I always became the guy that whenever somebody was scared to ask, the boss is a question they asked me to ask. It used to piss me off. I'm like, where's your cojones at? You outranked me. Some of them outranked me by 3 or 4 ranks. So I digress. The Ohtani situation is an ugly black eye. They're trying to keep it on the down low, and they're hoping it goes away, but this has a chance to blow up. So Ohtani's comments. He states he's saddened and shocked. He finally came out and gave a press conference, and it was a weak-ass press conference. He didn't really say anything to enlighten us on what's really happening. He states he's saddened and shocked. He's never bet on baseball or any other sport. He didn't realize Mizuhara had a gambling problem until he confessed. In fact, he didn't even realize the depth of what Mizuhara had said or had done until Mizuhara confessed to the team in English. And I guess the body language, the tone, Ohtani realized, oh, this is different than what I thought. And then he says he never agreed to pay off the debt or make payments to the bookie. That's where I think he's lying. I really do think he's lying. Unless he truly did not know about any of this. And that's possible. I'll get to that in a second. Now, Mizuhara told the team that Ohtani he would never gamble again. That's my notes don't say that, but I'm trying to read between the lines. But look, until gamblers hit rock bottom, just like alcoholics, they're going to hide it as long as they have money to lose. And he got caught. He was still going through the money. That's the only reason he's not going to gamble. And yes, he is a terrible gambler, $4.5 million. What a moron. So potential scenarios. So the current scenario, Mizuhara gambled into massive debt, and Ohtani paid it off without realizing the actions and implications that could have. That's where we sit at right now, even though their lawyers are, he says, she said. Two, Ohtani has a gambling problem with Mizuhara being the fall guy. Yeah, I don't know about that. You never say never, but it's hard to believe that based on the reporting and what we've seen of Ohtani. But again, never say never. 3. Mishihara used Ohtani's accounts to pay the debt without Ohtani's knowledge. Now, again, my previous life in the Alzheimer's Association, this is not as hard to believe as most people think. My social service experience, I worked on fundraising. I wasn't a social service worker. I was the guy who helped raise the money. But we worked hand in hand with social services on our side. And they weren't really social services. We were more for the caregivers. But that job, you saw everything. And there's tons of tales I could tell you about wealthy families where trust age and the wealthy person being too busy, or in the case that I was in, the wealthy person losing his mental faculties. It allows others to understand and know the wealthy individual's sensitive account information. So this, so somebody like Ohtani, who's what, 140, I forget how many games a year, but 100, you know, too many games to count. On the road, you start to count on people to handle your money when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. Ipe could have been involved in signing off on checks, wire transfers, many ways that we just can't fathom because we don't have that type of money. So that scenario means Mishihara manipulated Ohtani into paying. Oh, I'm sorry. So that's where the scenario where Mizuhara used Ohtani's accounts to pay the debt without Ohtani's knowledge. So that is possible. So right now we have 3 scenarios. The current scenario: Mizuhara gambled into massive debt. Ohtani paid it off. Neither one realized ramifications of what they were doing. The second scenario: Ohtani has a gambling problem with Mizuhara being the fog guy. The third scenario, Mizuhara used Ohtani's accounts to pay the debt without Ohtani's knowledge. And the fourth scenario, Mizuhara manipulated Ohtani into paying because of a language barrier. Hey, boss, come on, Dad, don't stress me, man. And that happens. I've seen that happen as a Latino. Where I shouldn't say it, but they take advantage of the poor American. I never have, but I'm well aware of my relatives, some of the seedier ones. So, yes, that could happen. Ohtani states Mizuhara didn't tell him about the media inquiries into the issue and other issues. That's why some people believe that. You know, last week in Korea, the Korean media reached out to the representative in Ohtani's camp inquiring about potential involvement. Ipe never revealed to him, now this is per Ohtani, what the media inquiry was or to any of his representatives to his camp. Possible there's a language barrier. They're talking to him in Korean, you know, and Ohtani's reps may not, hell, they're Japanese for one thing, a lot of them, I'm sure. But the language issue could become. So, Ipe told him the story about Ohtani paying the debt off. But upon further questioning, supposedly it was revealed that Ipe was the one in debt, not Ohtani. And the media was led to believe that Ohtani was paying off his debts. Quote, all of this has been a complete lie for Ohtani. We don't know. In fact, what I just told you, all these comments, it's like, how does that make sense? Where am I? People start saying a lot of garbage, a lot of things just on top of their head that make no sense. That's where we're at with Ohtani. Luckily, he's got lawyers who are sitting there weaving a tale. But at the end of the day, there's a lot more to be said unless it's swept under the rug. And it could be. It could be. So where do we stand? While Ohtani is not facing any discipline from MLB, his involvement was initially described as aiding Mizuhara with gambling debts. And now there's an investigation underway with both the MLB and the feds were already conducting an investigation, but specifically the IRS is investigating the matter now too. It's probing Mizuhara for potential tax code violations and by extension, Ohtani. Mizuhara paints Ohtani as a wealthy friend who intervened on his behalf to square his debts. And if Ohtani did so, as Mizuhara initially claimed in 9 $500,000 payments to Bowyer, While theoretically well-meaning, it may have violated the federal tax code. The bottom line, Ohtani is represented as a Dodger ownership. Refuse to answer questions. Thus, we're going to get a lot of rumors filling the airways here over the next week or so. MLB does not have access to Mizuhara neither. So their investigation isn't going to go very far. First of all, Ohtani's not going to talk to them because he's got a very powerful players union and his own legal team protecting him. And because Mizuhara is has been let go by the Dodgers, he's no longer an employee. I think the wild card here is Mizuhara. They want to protect Ohtani. They even if he's in the wrong, they're going to do everything to protect him. He's the face of the league right now. And because of that, I think professional sports leagues, they have issues with legal gambling organizations like DraftKings, FanDuel. Players like to gamble, as do their friends and family. And this is going to happen more. Look, I already think boxing and basketball are fixed. Don't believe me? Tim Donaghy, he showed how basketball is fixed. Don't believe me? Go watch the Los Angeles Lakers versus the Portland Trail Blazers in the playoff series from the 90s with Shaq for two straight years. Portland beat the Lakers, had them beat, and the refs literally gave the Lakers so much rope to get back in the game, purposely missed calls. I say purposely because the refs looking right at the play and not making the call. So I already believe the leagues are tainted in certain ways. And again, Tim Donaghy proved basketball was fixed and could be easily fixed. You know, so this is going to be a big problem moving forward. And the league better figure out a way to address it now in conjunction with the government, or a politician is going to look to make their name and come down hard on the leagues. And that, my friends, is the Ohtani debacle. Let's move on. I've been here for an hour and 2 minutes. I was going to talk about some of the major NFL rule changes, but I think I'm going to do that with the next podcast, and I apologize. We're at an hour and 10 minutes. Look, I love to get into the weeds. When you listen to me, you're going to get into the weeds. I'm getting better at this because I tend to go here, then I tend to go there, 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 and then everywhere. But you get a lot of in-depth info, and you get information that isn't necessarily common knowledge, which should be, and I pride myself on that. So I will pick up on with NFL running backs, NFL rule changes, and other quick hits with the next points on the board. In the meantime, I thank you for listening. I thank you for supporting us. And I ask you to share our work. You can find this podcast and our new basketball podcast, All Basketball Talk, mostly NBA. It talks of March Madness, the buzzer beaters. You can find that, our libertarian, our political podcast, and our entertainment podcast at Grumley's Media. You can find us on YouTube and Rumble, as well as traditional outlets, Spotify, Pandora, Google, Apple. And that's it. Under the profile, Grumblings Media. My friends, I am William Del Pilar. This is Points on the Board. And until next time, my friends, I bid you adieu.